Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Right now, on Last Call, place your bids. A consortium of investors plotting a big move for TikTok, but could it actually be sold? Elon Musk's very mixed day. SpaceX making a giant leap in its quest for the stars, but Tesla's woes taking yet another turn. A shocking twist. New details just coming out around this week's incident on a Boeing 787. You're going to want to hear this. There is no photoshopping this. Why Adobe investors are slamming sell right now. Plus, banking on gains, where the top opportunities may lie a year after Silicon Valley banks collapse. And you can't be serious. Will Saudi Arabia's quest to take over tennis succeed? Broadcaster, former tennis star Patrick McEnroe will join us live. All that and more over the hour. Belly up or buckle up, because Last Call is up right now. Happy Thursday, everybody. Good evening here. Good afternoon out west. I'm Brian Sullivan. All that and more coming up across the hour. But first up on Last Call, some surprising data today that likely confirms what you already know. The war on inflation has not yet been won. I mean, you know it from your own costs, but if you got to be shown it, here you go. Let's start with something that we all start our day with, probably coffee. Coffee prices up 19% in 6 months. Chocolate Easter bunnies also eating away at our wallets, because the price of cocoa has doubled in just 6 months. Okay, those are small things, but rent's not. Rent prices have jumped 6% from last year. Eating's not. And if you're dining out tonight, expect your bill to be 4.5% higher over the same time last year, and not including the bigger tip you're probably going to leave. Some other key services and products have also spiked in the short term. Take a look at wholesale gasoline, coal, and crude oil. They have all surged over the past month. And today, the IEA actually raised its global oil demand estimate by a lot, as gasoline demand in America actually goes up, even with the EV buildout. Even metals that, you know, can be used to build stuff, they're going up. Palladium, widely used in cars, up 15%. Nickel, used in batteries, up 13%, and you can't have electricity without copper wiring, and copper up 9%. That's all just in 1 month. Oh, and if you were hoping the cost to borrow money was going to go down, as some say here in Jersey, forget about it. Borrowing costs are going back up. Just this week, the 10-year Treasury yield jumped back above 4.2%. So, yes, the rate of inflation, the pace of inflation, it has cooled down over the past year. But as we just showed you, if you zoom in over the short term, it is very possible that that rate could tick back up. And if it does, that could have big implications, not only for your costs and your own family budgets, but about what the Federal Reserve does, what the markets do, and your money does overall. For more on inflation and what it might mean for your money and the markets, let's bring in Piper Sandler's Managing Director and Chief Market Technician, Craig Johnson, and Stone X Chief Market Strategist, Catherine Rooney Vera. Craig, I'm going to start with you, because you're one of the few out there, technicians or otherwise, who kind of got it right. You've nailed multiple rallies over the 15 years or so that we have been talking about. What does your sort of technical crystal ball say to you, maybe not just about rates, but about the stock market at large?
Well, stock market at large, Brian, this is a market that's at the upper end of an 18-month price channel. And whether you're looking at the S&P, the NASDAQ, or the Dow, we're at the upper end. This is not where you start another leg higher. I've been very clear that I think that the next move in this market is lower, not higher. And we've been sort of putting about a 5 to 10% sort of band around that. And Brian, to your point here about inflation, it's really crystal clear. Just take a look at the chart of the CRB index this evening, and you can see those are the major commodities. You got Majority of it is oil, but it's going to include a lot of other commodities. You're reversing a downtrend for the first time since mid-22. And at this point in time, that clearly is more inflationary. And Brian, to the point you made about bonds, take a look at the 10-year bond yield. You're just at a point in time we're about to break out. If we see a move above 4.33, you could probably see about another 50 basis points higher before it could sort of run out of steam. So there's no question that the Fed's got a unique challenge on their hands at this point in time as the inflation battle is not done.
Yeah, Catherine Rooney-Vera, would you agree that, you know, the pace of inflation is down, but it does, the battle may be won in the short term, but it doesn't look like the war is over. And that could change the Fed's thinking.
Yeah, that's right. And I agree with Craig in many senses, primarily because the Fed is unlikely to be able to cut with inflation still running hot. Yes, it's moved lower and markedly lower, but we're not quite at trend 2%. We don't have to hit two and bounce back. It's a trend 2%, which is the goal. And with these recent economic data from economic growth to, you know, still pretty robust retail sales, although we saw a deceleration there, to inflation prints from PPI to CPI to core PCE. The housing market hasn't really rolled over quite yet. Consumption remains strong. The Fed can't cut in that environment. So I think we're lucky if we do get a cut in June. As we get closer to the election, it gets a little more complicated. Next week, we get the Fed meeting. We're going to get the SEP. We're probably going to get, I suspect, a downward move in the dots, which means that the Fed is more likely than not going to be implying two 25 basis point cuts this year rather than the three they previously had.
Said maybe a different way and sort of more plain speak, if you will, Minneapolis style, Craig Johnson, which is if it looks like we will not get a rate cut this year, and we could still, but let's say it becomes more apparent or the bets are that we may not, does that mean it's possible that the stock market, the S&P 500, has topped out? It's made its highs for the year.
Well, Brian, that fits right in with sort of an HLTR or the high-level trading range, Brian, that we've been discussing. This is typically what you see in election years, and it is also something we very well could see. If the Fed isn't going to cut, small mid-cap stocks are going to struggle. These large-cap stocks and playbook that have been occurring over the last 18 months probably gets a little bit more back in vogue. And from our perspective, I think you got to sort of keep playing this right down the lines of think about the Microsofts, think about some of those names, think about the banks. Those are companies and areas of the market that could do well if the Fed is going to stay on pause here for a while, from our perspective, okay? Because the banks haven't really done well for a while. And Microsoft is still trending very well. But these small mid-caps could be a little bit more of a challenge, Brian, clearly. And lastly, I'll just say, if you look at the world interest rate probabilities, the odds of a rate cut clearly are falling, but it's moving out. It now looks like September is when you can see the first cut. That's the highest probability from the May-June timeframe, which people originally thought.
Wow, amazing. Guys, we got a lot of news tonight, so we're just going to leave it here. We'll get you both back on soon, Catherine and Craig. Thank you both very much. Quickly, let's take a look at your money and what happened today. Markets declined across the board, but not a lot. Again, 0.3%. Inside the market, your stud and dud of the day, the big winner, West Pharmaceutical. They make syringes and other things like that. It is up 10% this week. The big decliner was Lennar, the home builder. People didn't like their earnings. The CEO saying, yeah, affordability remains a concern for home buyers. Quick check on your futures. See what may happen. Mildly in the red. All right, up next, a rush to buy TikTok is on, and you may not believe what bold-faced Wall Street and Washington name may be interested. Plus, a very big high and a pretty rough low for Elon Musk today. Both sides of that story straight ahead.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
All right, welcome back. Former Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin. Remember him? Making news on Squawk Box this morning saying he wants to buy TikTok.
I think the legislation should pass, and I think it should be sold. I understand the technology. It's a great business, and I'm going to put together a group to buy TikTok. This should be owned by U.S. businesses. There's no way that the Chinese would ever let a U.S. company own something like this in China.
Now, Mnuchin did not say how, or more importantly, who would help finance that bid, because according to the Wall Street Journal, TikTok could be valued at more than $100 billion. That's real coin. And apparently, Mnuchin is not the only one who may be interested. Just a few days ago, former Activision CEO Bobby Kotick also signaling interest to ByteDance founders. Again, that is according to the Journal. Now, as that House bill progresses through Congress, more critics of the bill are beginning to speak out. Venture capitalist David Sachs writing on X, quote, "The fact that advocates of the TikTok bill refuse to take overreach concerns seriously and instead attack the people who raise them as traitors only convinces me that the bill must be rotten." In a second post, quote, "TikTok now, X later." Is he right? But could anybody actually buy TikTok at $100+ billion? Let's bring in somebody who knows this topic very well. That is Patrick Bet-David. He is an entrepreneur. He is the founder of Valuetainment, a media and entertainment company. The Valuetainment YouTube channel has got more than 5 million subscribers. By the way, also a former minority owner in the New York Yankees and a veteran. And we always thank you for your service, Patrick. Welcome to Last Call. What's that, Adrian?
Thanks for having me on. It's great to be on.
Okay. Thank you very much, Patrick. Sorry about that. I was doing a little... I have a friend in my head named Adrian. Sometimes I just reference him randomly. Patrick, thanks for joining us.
I understand.
First off, do you think TikTok is worth more than $100 billion?
TikTok is whatever the founders are wanting to sell the number and whatever they're willing to pay for it. Here's a couple of things I think we're not thinking about. One, it's fair to say majority of America is not comfortable with China controlling TikTok. We saw that yesterday on the way they voted. It wasn't even close. So it's not a left thing. It's not a right thing. It's an America thing. We haven't seen something like this in a long time. Two, of the candidates that can buy this company, you talked about a couple of the names, Mnuchin, Kotak, but you have to also add Musk at any point could pick up a company like this if he wanted to. He has the money. Next, you have to look at Larry Ellison teaming up with Walmart. When you think about Walmart, the Walton family, they have three kids. The poorest kid is worth $74 billion, and Larry Ellison, he's the engine behind of it, so they're not going to have a hard time getting the money. And last but not least, you cannot forget what Microsoft did. A lot of people, Google wanted to buy LinkedIn a few years ago, and Microsoft came and picked up LinkedIn, and we know what a behemoth LinkedIn is today when you think about recruiting. So Microsoft could be in that place. So we have to pay attention to all these guys. But there's a couple things I don't think we're thinking about. TikTok has around 2.1 billion to 2.4 billion active users worldwide, of which only 170 million is in America, which is less than 10%. So imagine if you run this company and you own TikTok and you're sitting there saying, why am I being forced to sell this company because one country has 170 million users? What if all of a sudden TikTok says, ban us? We don't want to do business in the US. We don't care. We're not selling. Then what happens? Then you lose an entire voter base of the younger generation that are going to be upset. They're going to say, why did you make that decision? So we many, many years ago, Brian, you would remember this in 2019. This was 5 years ago when Trump made a decision to ban Huawei because the CFO, the daughter of the owner, was in Canada doing deals with Iran. And all of a sudden, a lot of Americans were using Huawei and boom, Huawei's out. That could happen here. So there's a lot of moving parts with TikTok.
Yeah, what's interesting, though, and your point is well taken, but I'm sure, listen, the 170 million in America, we're higher income earners, right, than maybe some other nations. So the ad dollars are worth probably a little bit more. If ByteDance is unwilling, though, to do that, Patrick, if they say, no, we're going to stay in the United States, we're going to fight this thing because they are fighting it. Does that tell you something about maybe them wanting to be here a little bit too much? You heard the comments from David Sachs. I think you know David very well, that he's worried about some sort of overreach as well. Do you worry about those things or China's intentions?
I worry about a lot of what David Sachs is saying. We're probably on the same page, 90% of what he's saying, and the other 10% I'm not aware of. But, Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things that worries me here. One of the things that worries me is we know our number one enemy in America is China. I mean, we can say Russia, we can say Iran, we can have those three competing on a monthly basis, and maybe we can add somewhere there Turkey and a couple other countries on that list. But number one is probably going to be China because they want to be bigger than us and they want to take the lead, and they're going through a lot of problems right now over there. Their stock market is $2 trillion. It's pretty much the same valuation as NVIDIA. And you know what, when I say these numbers here, they're not as big of a stock market like we are. They need America. But at the same time, maybe they're worried when Elon Musk, when he bought X, a lot of people were worried. What about the Twitter files? The Twitter files. Did you see this? The Twitter files. What if we have the TikTok files? What does that look like? Do they want the TikTok files to be leaked? What if we get the technology? What if our engineers now unpack it and take a look at it to see what they were really doing? What if we really learn about their intentions and the involvement from the government and what Xi was doing? Do they want that to be known? Yeah. I don't know if they want that to be known. And then last but not least, if I'm Elon Musk and David Sachs and anybody else that's an investor in X, I'm a little bit concerned what this precedent sets up for the next thing where the government can come in and say, hey, we don't like the way Elon is doing what he's doing with X. Let's shut him down. We don't like the way they're doing this. We think they need to divest.
But Patrick, isn't it about a foreign-controlled entity?
A lot of those things.
I think that the foreign-controlled entity part, that's the key, right? Or do you think that this text gives it enough flexibility to do something like that?
Right. The difference is this is a bill, meaning if a company is buying TikTok without a bill that sets the tone for future decisions to be made, that's a different story. Go ahead and make the offer and do the transaction, but it's not a bill. If it's a bill, a future senator, congressman, president, somebody can come back and say, do you remember that bill in 2024 when we forced TikTok to sell through ByteDance and da-da-da-da-da? That can be used in a future lawsuit against one of the social media companies.
Let's talk about sports. You own a 5% stake in the New York Yankees. So you don't have this problem. The New York Yankees are probably one of the few teams that don't have this problem. But I also know that you know this. People with all the streaming platforms, I'm sure you hear it, I hear it, people are at home agree with it, they're having trouble finding what they want to see. Now you got this proposed super app between Warner Brothers Discovery and other, and if you don't subscribe to this, then you can't watch that. Where does this all play out, Patrick? Because people just want to be able to turn on the TV and watch, you know, the Buffalo Sabres, right? That's not going to happen to the New York Yankees, but it's getting a little bit chaotic out there.
It is, and there's a part of it that I like. By the way, it's not 5%. I know on Wikipedia it says 5%, but I am a minority owner in the Yankees, the greatest Major League Baseball organization of all time, greatest brand. But let's talk about this. I trust capitalism. I believe you do as well. There's a couple things that happens to capitalism. When one way of doing business gets too stagnant, too comfortable, and they have a lot of power, they tend to decrease the amount of innovation, and they just kind of look at the margins, the numbers, our quarterly earnings. They no longer look at a lot of innovation. And cable TV has been declining aggressively over the last few years. I know I'm doing this on cable. I hate the fact that I'm doing this, but you asked me the question, so I'm giving it to you. On the capitalism side, there's three things that's keeping cable in business. One is boomers. Number two is big pharma. And number three is sports. We still consume a lot of our sports on TV, and boomers still consume news at night through TV. They're not ones that use phone. My dad is 81, about to be 82, and my dad's on his phone all the time. But market is changing. We saw a couple case studies this last year, which was beautiful, and it annoyed a lot of people. I heard Charles Barkley wasn't happy about this. The NFL sold that one game, I believe it was Chiefs against the Miami Dolphins, for $110 million to Peacock. And everybody's like, wait a minute, why are you doing this? This sucks. This is the greed of the rich. And I cannot believe you're doing this. But guess what? It worked. 23 million people watched the game on Peacock. That was a proven case study that it's going to be coming in very soon. And I think a lot of people are going to go that direction.
We do not mind that 23 million people watched it on Peacock. We do not mind that you are on cable TV right now, Patrick Bet-David. Great conversation. Welcome back anytime. Thanks for watching also, by the way, to all those boomers. We love you. All right, thank you. Quick programming note. On Monday and Tuesday, I'm going to be live from CERAWeek, world's premier energy conference. Amazing lineup. Over 2 days' time, the CEOs of ExxonMobil, Shell, ConocoPhillips, Chevron, and it's not just about oil and gas. Got a very rare interview with the CEO of NextEra Energy, one of the largest renewable energy producers in America. Also might have some surprises thrown in there for you. Tune in Monday and Tuesday all day on CNBC. And, of course, Last Call live in Houston. Still ahead. Stunning new details around a Boeing 787 terrifying plunge this week, but could be good news for Boeing. I don't want to hear it. Plus, the highest of highs and a tough new low for Elon Musk. Stick around.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
All right, let's get now to tomorrow's news tonight. Some of the stories and headlines you're going to be talking about tomorrow. First up, Adobe shares sagging right now. That stock is down over 10%. Investors still looking for more. In terms of digital media revenue, additionally, competition from platforms like OpenAI's Sora have some investors wary, but Adobe CEO doesn't see Sora as a risk.
I firmly believe that all of these technologies are just going to be an accelerant. The state of the art as it relates to Sora allows you to create these really small snippets of video. And the technology is amazing in that it now understands physics, it understands interactions.
All right, next up, a major development on the LATAM Boeing 787 flight that injured roughly 50 passengers. Get this. According to a story just out in the Wall Street Journal, a mishap in the cockpit may have caused the flight's sudden plunge. Not wind, not turbulence, not a dashboard. Let's bring in the Wall Street Journal reporter who broke the story with his colleague, Sharon Turlip, and that is Andrew Tangle. Andrew, a stewardess dropped a tray of food or hit a button and cause the pilot to fall into the stick?
The exact sequence of events is not clear, and this incident is still under investigation. And the Chilean authorities are looking into this and going to be examining, what's on the flight data recorder and all of that. But it appears at this point, a likely scenario that's emerging is that there was a cockpit mishap with a motorized feature of a pilot's seat that it may have been inadvertently hit by a flight attendant who was serving a meal, and that led the motorized feature in the seat to push the pilot forward into the control column of the aircraft, and that would produce a nose down a nose down movement of the aircraft. And that is what are, the preliminary details so far in this investigation.
I also, in your story, I'm going to tweet it out. It's fascinating. Also, apparently the switch or the button is supposed to have some kind of a cover on it and not utilized in certain ways. So it sounds like if this indeed is what happened, it was kind of a comedy of errors that left 50 people injured.
There are a lot of questions still to be answered about the switch, the cover, Boeing, the maker of this particular aircraft, is expected to issue some sort of memo to the airlines that operate this aircraft, something related to this seat and the feature. So we'll have to see what that says. And of course, new information is emerging as presumably the investigators talk to the members of the flight crew and see what data they can find from the aircraft itself. But it's pretty interesting. To see something like this lead potentially be what led or contributed to a very terrifying midair scare for a lot of passengers that resulted in a lot of injuries.
Yeah, so steep, in fact, that people apparently went to the ceiling because the plane went down so quickly. Scary story, but maybe a little bit of good news in a bad week for Boeing. Andrew, really appreciate it. I'm going to send that story out. Everyone should read it. Thank you. All right, in the meantime, Elon Musk has a lot to celebrate today, at least at SpaceX. The aeronautics company was founded today, 22 years ago. And they celebrated by launching their third test flight for their massive Starship rocket. It traveled further than ever before, so congrats to them. But unfortunately for Musk, SpaceX is, of course, not his only company making headlines. Both Wells Fargo and UBS cutting their price targets on Tesla today. Wells also downgraded it, calling it a, quote, growth company with no growth. Tesla, believe it or not, is actually the worst performer in the S&P 500 so far this year. The worst, on 35%. With us tonight to talk about both of it, Wall Street Journal tech columnist and CNBC contributor Tim Higgins, also the author of that book, Power Play, Tesla, Elon Musk, and the Bet of the Century. Tim, SpaceX, very good, amazing. But I want to talk about Tesla. It's a public company. A lot of our viewers and listeners may actually own the stock. What do you think is going on with Tesla stock right now?
Yeah, this is just a really potentially bad year for the company. Not a lot to be excited about if you're an investor. We're between kind of huge waves. So the Model 3, Model Y wave of vehicles helped remake the car company into a mainstream electric automaker. And now we're waiting for that next big vehicle, the next generation vehicle that Elon has promised, but he hasn't quite said what year it's going to be in. And that's really what's going to fuel the future of the company. So right now we might have the Cybertruck, which, you know, some people are excited about, but it's never going to be a huge, huge seller. There's some excitement about maybe the next generation Roadster coming down the road. But right now we're in kind of an uncomfortable period if you are a growth stock story, because the growth just isn't there that we saw in the years ago.
Do you think there's a reason why? Is it interest rates? Is it increased competition in EVs? Is it some people, you know, listen, the reality is some people say, well, they don't like Musk, they're not going to buy his products.
You know, probably all of the above. Interest rates make it harder for a lot of people to buy these cars. They're just more expensive. Elon has talked a lot about that. One of the other things is these vehicles that he has out there, most of them are getting to be long in the tooth. The Model 3 came out in 2017. The Model Y followed a few years later. These are successful vehicles, but people are not necessarily always about what was the cool thing. They want the next cool thing, right? And the Tesla and Elon have kind of made this gamble that their next big volume generation car is years away. And that's really atypical of a car company. They want to have constant churn, bringing out new models to keep the excitement, keep people coming back time and time again. And right now, they just don't have that. They're hoping the software changes or kind of tweaks to the body of the Model 3 will excite people to come back. But it's just a tough game.
Well said. And we'll leave it there. Tim Higgins, thank you very much. All right, coming up, where opportunity knocks 1 year after Silicon Valley Bank's collapse. One of the world's leading bank execs is here to tell you what he sees and why America is in a very good place. Tonight's RBI is about Wall Street's seemingly favorite stocks. But what does that even mean? Well, MarketWatch found the top five stocks are the most upside in analyst price targets, their current prices. Now, often this will happen because the street is bullish, even on stocks that are going down. And because of that metric, it is clear that no NVIDIA or other red-hot AI names are on this list. And remember, analysts can and do often get it wrong, or they can take their price targets down. So take this list with a giant grain of sea salt. But we found it fascinating, random, but interesting. So we're going to bring it to you. Here are the top five stocks now that have the highest implied 12-month upside against their current price. Number five, SLB, formerly known as Schlumberger, analyst there, 30% upside. Same story with Aptiv, an automotive technology company. Next up, Insulet, analysts see a 35% upside there over the next year. Stock two, a biggie, First Solar. Street still sees a bright future for the company, even as the stock has gone way down. But the highest implied upside kind of goes to what we've been talking about a lot the last couple days, United Airlines. That's right. Analysts right now expect United stock to soar over the next 12 months with an average price target of $63.50. United Airlines is about $43, $44 right now. So they see a lot of upside there. Fascinating. And United, just get me safely to LAX tomorrow. All right, and on time. Now, to a truly global view on banking and the economy, because my, how things have changed in a year. About a year ago was when Silicon Valley Bank collapsed, sparking bank failure fears, and many bank stocks tanked. That led also to the collapse of Silvergate, Signature Bank, and First Republic. It was a scary time. But your next guest is one of the few who got it right. As the head of BNP Paribas US, he sold Bank of the West before the panic for over $16 billion. He's also helped grow the Paris-based bank into a true Wall Street powerhouse, bringing over more than 900 people from Deutsche Bank and building out a massive hedge fund and climate infrastructure business. BNP Paribas, also the headline sponsor of the huge tennis tournament happening right now in California, where they are partnering up with the McEnroe's Tennis Academy to help bring tennis to kids and teens who otherwise might get priced out. And the bank's now vice chair of the Americas at BNP Paribas USA, joining us now, a man well known to all hours of the day on CNBC, 5 a.m., 7 p.m., Jean-Yves Filion from the tennis tournament. Jean-Yves, you're a modest guy. I know you won't take as much credit as you should. Is there something you saw before the banking crisis hit that made you say this is now the time that we need to sell, or was it just kind of a macro feel about the economy?
Brian, first and foremost, thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure and a privilege. The situation you just referred to, really the banking industry has really learned the hard lesson. I believe the situation you are referring to, Silicon Valley Bank, it's a very isolated, I would say idiosyncratic situation. It was really around interest rate, asset liability management, or lack thereof. What I can share is since the banking industry has continued to perform, the regulation has been tightened up, including the supervision. And this banking industry is really well run, probably better run, definitely well capitalized and very liquid. Then it's one of the pillars, by the way, of the support of this economy that continues to thrive.
Yeah, and part of that reason, and I know you're optimistic, Johnny, from previous conversations, is that some of the government programs that have been enacted, the CHIPS Act, the Infrastructure Reduction Act, whatever people may think of them from a political perspective, they're bringing a lot of capital into the United States or growing U.S. capital. I know BNP Paribas is certainly a part of that. Are you seeing, because you're in over 65 countries, you truly have a global view. Are you seeing global capital that is being attracted to the United States?
We do. And you know, we are very active supporting what we call the transatlantic corridor. Obviously, the programs you just referred to, CHIPS Act, IRA, Infrastructure Act, have driven a lot of interest and investments domestically. But we've seen, and we see it firsthand from our strategic European clients who have strong interest as well here to have access to the deep investor market to expand their production capabilities and capacities. And it's been actually very profitable and supportive for the business of BNP Paribas in the United States, as we're well equipped, being one of the lead bank in sustainability, being one of the lead banks in project finance, and having a good understanding of what we call the mixed economy, because here it requires capital coming from various origins, including strategics, including private equity.
We led the show with concern that inflation may start to pick back up again. There's a lot of debate about what the Federal Reserve may do. I know you got a lot of great people there, research, trading, global view. Jean-Yves, what is your view on the U.S. economy? You're obviously optimistic about the money coming in. Do you worry about it being reinflationary? And what are your thoughts about the Federal Reserve?
You know, Brian, when you and I were discussing this matter just a few months ago, back in 2023, we were concerned about potential sticky inflation, higher interest rates, potential recession. I would say 3 months into 2024, it's a different discussion. You know, this economy the outlook is much more reasonable. We expect, you know, the Fed adjusting, and the combination of what we call positive supply shocks, higher real incomes, as well as an easier monetary conditions, will probably continue to provide tailwinds. I'm not saying full sailing, you know, but tailwinds to this global economy. And we expect, our economist has actually revised their forecast for the GDP growth in this country over 2%. And we expect the Fed to only start cutting in June. Expect 75 bps of cuts in 2024, 2025, which will lead 2025 and Fed fund rates around 4%, and you might expect more in 2026.
Yeah, maybe it's getting pushed out. Well, perhaps only one this year. I want to talk about what's behind you, and we can hear it, Jean-Yves. Of course, BNP Paribas Open. It's tennis, you know, and it's become really the fifth major, I would say, in tennis. But more than that, I want to recognize good work. You guys are doing good work. You've partnered up with the Tennis Academy to make tennis more accessible to those families, kids and teens, that may not otherwise be able to afford it. It will not and is not an inexpensive endeavor at the highest levels. Why tennis? Why this program with the McEnroes?
Well, first and foremost, we feel at BNP Paribas, having supported tennis for over 50 years, that the values of tennis fit the values of the bank. It's international, the bank is global. It's about sportsmanship, it's about respecting your opponent, it's about hard work, it's about being competitive, and that works well. As it relates to Indian Wells, we got involved with this tournament 16 years ago. It was a sponsorless. As you said, well, it's become the fifth major, and we have amazing matches and amazing players here, Grand Slam dimension. But what really I like highlighting here is the contribution to the local economy, to the Coachella Valley region. It's over half a billion of revenues annually. It's 8,000 full-time jobs created. And this year, Saturday, we had 55,000 fans visiting, 53,000 fans on Sunday. We're on a trend of probably 500,000 fans visiting for the 2 weeks, which is really a Grand Slam benchmark. Then the contribution to the community relates and rely as well on supporting youth. And this is what we do here with the scholarship program, but with John and Patrick McEnroe, with the Academy, providing support to talented kids who could be playing on the tour. But you know what these kids do? They go to school. They learn. They are good students. Last year, John and Patrick sent two to Princeton, one to Harvard, one to UPenn. I think it's changing lives.
That is amazing. Good work in pending United Airlines and everything else. Hope to be one of those fans this weekend. Johnny Filion, great stuff.
We look forward to having you over here, Brian.
Thank you so much, Johnny, for having me. Thank you. All right. In a few minutes, we're going to be speaking with the aforementioned Patrick McEnroe about the tournament, the charitable work, and what he thinks about Saudi Arabia maybe trying to take over tennis. But coming up next, AI for architects? Designing your home may never be the same.
And the very definition of change is to be different. I've embraced what it means to be a different leader. And as a female in a predominantly male space, I've had to see that as the potential legacy that I get to leave, to change an industry and a culture. For Bobby, that meant doing so much more than powdered milk, to fundamentally change the face of what it means to be a parent in the U.S. today.
Well, as with seemingly everything else these days, AI is now apparently moving into housing, specifically architecture and construction. The company that developed the first 3D printed home is now unveiling new AI technology that could eventually replace architects. What will Mr. Brady do? Diane Olick joining us now with the details. Diane.
That's right, Brian. Icon is a pioneer in 3D printed homes, and now they're unveiling what they call Vitruvius, an AI program that is yet another step in housing automation. It enables consumers not just to design their own homes online, but to take their vision much further.
The big vision of Vitruvius is to go all the way from human desire all the way through delivery. So like construction documents, budget schedules, even robotic instructions.
So Vitruvius asks you questions and then learns from your answers as well as from every design it's ever seen. Then it gives you three potential homes. So I tried it out with Ballard's help.
I'd like a log cabin style vacation ski home.
How many bedrooms and bathrooms?
I'd like 5 bedrooms and at least 3.5 bathrooms. I'd like an open floor plan for family events.
Would you like the home to feature any specific amenities such as a fireplace, a mudroom for ski equipment, or a hot tub?
I want all of that.
Ready? Uh-huh. Let's go. And now it's beginning to generate.
Oh, I like the second one.
It's got the fireplace in your bedroom, as you have asked. This is a one story right now.
Okay, I think I'd like a two story.
And you'll notice it put the bedroom on the second floor because you said you wanted a living area. downstairs. And so it's really understood quite a bit.
Can I change it right now to see what an affordable home would look
like? Let's see. This looks expensive. Can you make the home more affordable? And so you can see it's made it a little smaller.
The kitchen's smaller, I see.
Everything is smaller. Everything's a little more basic.
So Vitruvius can also show you what the home would look like if it were 3D printed, and it would put in the specs for that printer. It can also design the home in the style of a famous architect, living or dead. Of course, Brian, that opens up questions about copyright, as with everything else in AI.
It's an awesome story, and who knew Diana Olick wanted such a large second home? Diana Olick, thank you.
Of course I do.
Of course.
Why wouldn't I?
8-bedroom castle on the coast. Diana, thank you. I did the same. All right, let's get down to our quicker than the ticker, all the best of the rest of the headlines. Let's put 60 seconds on the clock. Apple acquiring Canadian AI startup Darwin AI. That, according to Bloomberg, no details on how much Apple paid. Darwin AI develops technology for visually inspecting manufacturing processes. Moving on down to the Sunshine State. According to new census data, the country's four fastest growing metro areas between 2020 and 2023 were all in Florida. The biggest increase, Lakeland, Florida, with a population growth of 12%. Senator Bernie Sanders introducing a new bill to move America to a 32-hour work week. He says it's to allow for, quote, a better quality of life. In his bill, the shortened work week would not come with a loss in pay. The Mega Millions lottery, now at $792 million. It's the sixth biggest Mega Millions ever. And your odds? One in 302.5 million. This year, Easter spending could top $22 billion. The National Retail Federation expects the average person to spend $177 on candy, clothing, and gifts. Coming up, Saudi Arabia's billion-dollar offer to take over tennis. We'll talk about it with broadcaster and former tennis star Patrick McEnroe next. Saudi Arabia may be making a major play for tennis. The Saudis Public Investment Fund, or PIF as it is known, just reportedly made a $2 billion sort of take-it-or-leave-it bid to merge men's and women's tennis. The alleged bid would put ATP and WTA Tours under the same umbrella, which could help with rights negotiations. It would add a Saudi-based tournament at the start of the season, which would conflict with the Australian-hosted tournaments right now. The offer reportedly expires in 90 days. Notably, the Saudi offer excludes tennis four Grand Slam events, the Australian Open, French Open, Wimbledon, and U.S. Open, because they all operate as their own entities. So it's unclear how any deal, if it happens, could impact them. Let's bring in Patrick McEnroe right now to talk about that and more. Obviously, commentator, star, and co-founder of the Tennis Academy, which we just talked about with Jean-Yves. Patrick, great to have you on. We'll get to that in a second. What do you make of this sort of mystery? It's kind of a mysterious situation with what's going on with Saudi Arabia and tennis.
Well, the establishment in the tennis world, Brian, and thanks for having me on the program, were shocked at what's happened in the last week here in the desert in Indian Wells, that this offer came through from the ATP head, that's Andrea Gaudenzi. The Grand Slams plus the tours, you know, they were hoping to come to some sort of agreement where they could all come together and essentially control the calendar of the professional tennis season. Well, with this Saudi offer, it's thrown things behind the scenes into real disarray. Here's one thing I know, Brian, there will be a lot more money coming to the players, I think, in the next few years. Whether that comes directly from the Saudis and they're then having control of the tours, I think is the big question. And I think the Grand Slams, the majors, as you rightly mentioned, sort of control their own tournaments and their own destinies, have got to come together and I think bring something with a little more meat to the table to see if they can work together to come up with a calendar that suits all of them. Otherwise, tennis goes the way of Formula One, soccer, and of course we've seen what's happened with LIV Golf in the last couple of years. Tennis seemed to be next.
If this deal occurs, Patrick, if Saudi Arabia sort of takes over the ATP and the WTA, what needs to happen with the majors, with the U.S. Open and the French Open and everything else? Because you, to your point, you don't want half the people at LIV Golf and half the people PGA. Tennis would not do well if that occurred.
Well, tennis needs the stars, Brian. You're absolutely right. Maybe even more so than golf, because that's spread out a little bit more as far as the big name players. So I think that's the $64,000 or maybe million or maybe billion-dollar question right now, is the entities that control tennis, meaning the majors and the tours, have to find a way to work this out internally. The question is, can they, before this deal from the Saudis will expire? And as you said, they put a pretty serious time frame on a decision there for the tours and for the players to make.
Got about 45 seconds here. But you're a TV pro, so I don't worry about it, Patrick. The Tennis Academy, how big can this get? I mean, you're changing people's lives here.
Well, we're changing lives. We've got 2,700 kids that come through our program from inner city schools and programs around New York City on Randall's Island, where our academy is there in New York City. And BNP Paribas, for the last 7 years, since 2017, has supported our top 10 kids. These are kids that are our top talented tennis players. But as Jean-Yves said earlier, most importantly, these are kids looking to go forward in life, to get a college degree. We've sent multiple kids to Ivy League schools and other schools as well. And over the last number of years, we've sent 40 kids to Division I college tennis schools. And that's really what we're most proud of, affecting the community and the lives of these young kids.
You know what? We knew you were nice. I actually am starting to think your brother may be nice as well. Amazing work there, Patrick McEnroe. Thank you very much. Hope to see you this weekend. Thanks for everybody. I'm off tomorrow. I'm headed out west. See you Monday. Shark Tank is next.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.